Saturday morning, time for the Beacon. You know, on the Beacon, we run profile programs, and today is one of those days where we're going to be profiling Carl Augusto, and he is one of the big honchos with the American Foundation for the Blind. Carl, how are you? Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to talk with you again and be on your show.
Well, I think if I'm not mistaken, you're the president or CEO.
Both.
Okay.
Just in case there's a doubt.
Who to blame, right?
Exactly.
That's the thing. You have been with AFB how long?
24 years. And Bill, I've said this since the day I was appointed. This is my dream job. I always wanted to work at AFB. I didn't care what I did.
Sure.
And to be in this position, to be the lucky person to have been chosen those 24 years ago was just a dream come true, and I still pinch myself every once in a while, living a dream.
Just to make sure that you're actually living it and not just dreaming it. Carl, what type of position did you start off with when you first went to AFB?
I came right into the president and CEO position.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
Did you really? Wow.
Yep.
What were you doing before this?
Well, before then, I was the executive director, the CEO of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Cincinnati, and actually, I've been in the blind biz, as I fondly call it,
yes,
since 1971. I graduated from college. I graduated with a master's degree in rehab counseling.
Okay.
Did not want to work with blind people. That's probably another story because I was struggling to accept my own blindness
Sure. At
the time and couldn't get a job working with anybody else. And I said, oh boy, I better settle for a blindness job. And I became a rehabilitation counselor and never regretted it after my first job in the blind biz.
Now, the organization in Cincinnati, is that similar to what the Chicago Lighthouse would be or an organization
Yes.
like that?
Yes, very similar. It's smaller, but it's multi-services, including an industries program. So in many respects, it's very, very similar.
Sure. Well, you know, I've noticed doing some research about other organizations in the blind community. There are a lot out there, but there are a lot that are suffering because of donations, money,
yep,
and grants and that sort of thing, because a lot of that that funding has kind of dried up for a lot of organizations, and you're seeing more and more creative ways of trying to raise money. The primary function of AFB is to do what?
Yeah, let me just comment on what you just said, because I think that's important. We do surveys of other organizations,
sure,
both local, regional, and state, and most of them have struggled since the economic crisis of 2008 and 2009. I know we have.
Mm-hmm.
In 2009, we had a downsize. Now, we've been stable since then, and
sure,
we're building up our finances again, but we haven't been able to grow. And the key thing, Bill, is that the number of people with vision loss is increasing, especially
mm-hmm,
among the older,
right,
the very old, and the very young, because medical technology is keeping low birth weight babies surviving.
Right.
That's a good thing, but again, they have multiple disabilities, including blindness. So this is a problem, and you're right. There are creative ways. Organizations are trying new revenue-generating activities. Some organizations are considering and have gone through mergers,
mm-hmm,
and I see that that's going to continue to happen. I think the days of organizations serving the blind being the one of those charities that gathers in more money than most disability
sure,
disabilities, I think those days are over. So I think we're going to be struggling more to keep and maintain our momentum in serving the greater number of blind people.
You have had a situation very, very close to what you're talking about happen right there in New York with the Lighthouse International.
Yep, yes.
Was a merger situation.
That's correct. These two venerable, I call them behemoths, the Jewish Guild for the Blind and the Lighthouse International, in September of 13, decided to merge. I think that's going very, very well, mm-hmm. incidentally.
Okay.
And, you know, it's whenever there's a merger, there's cultural issues,
sure.
culture issues, mission issues. So it's got to be hard. But both of those organizations seem to have merged very well. And I just talked to a couple of the leaders of that organization today, as a matter of fact, and merger continues to be going well.
Well, do you notice, are a lot of states doing what they're doing in Florida? There's quite a few blind organizations in Florida, but they all get together.
Yeah.
It seems like they sit down and they put their heads together, not only, I think, to raise money and funding, but to also come up with programs that will help, like you said, either the very young or the seniors that are starting to experience diseases like AMD and RP and glaucoma. And you touched on a subject that was really near and dear to me when you talked about babies surviving, because yeah. I just talked with a professor down at Georgia Regent University, and this had to do with neonatal care. And I was putting some facts together about blindness and ROP, and he said, you know, we've actually seen an increase. But he cited mm-hmm. the same thing you did. He said, we're able to keep younger fetuses alive, mm-hmm. Smaller gestation periods, 23 mm-hmm. to 25 weeks.
Yep,
he says, and that adds a complication.
Yeah,
he said, because you see the breathing and the cardio difficulties that these little tiny babies have,
yep.
And the ROP is just part of the whole picture when it comes to infants and that.
That's true, and I'm impressed, Bill, that you know about Florida. I think Florida is a model because they have 13 to 15 separate private agencies that, you know, there are most states don't have more than one, two, or three.
Right.
But I've seen it in New York, mostly Florida. I think Florida's a model in that regard. Texas may be number two.
Okay.
New York, North Carolina, California, those are states with a lot, you know, more than three
sure.
or four agencies, and they tend to cover different geographic areas, and that's terrific because they can get together. There's not that much competition. Now, when you know, in New York, when there were two behemoths, as I mentioned before,
sure.
and, you know, in some other cities like L.A., and well, let's see, even in Cincinnati, where I was,
sure.
there are two agencies for the blind. So there is a little more competition. But when it comes to state issues, they usually get together. And in Florida, when there's no geographic competition, they really do get together. And it really is a national model.
Well, you mentioned Chicago, Illinois, and that, and we have three right here. We have the Lighthouse, which is probably the largest and the most innovative of the three organizations. There's yeah. Second Sense, and then there's Blind Services. And each one has their own specific, in their mission statement, their own specific function. And I think that with the onset of the changing job field, you know, years back it was always somebody thought of that blind people could do medical transcriptions
yep.
and certain limited things. Now that we're seeing with technology, the whole spectrum of employment has opened wide, and
yep.
it seems like one organization always bubbles up to the top
right.
to serve the needs of people who are blind or visually impaired or getting older.
Yep.
And having to make a change yeah. in the way that they can continue to do the work that they've done all their life.
Absolutely, and I think Chicago is a good model because there's very little competition. Obviously, there's competition among the three agencies for funding.
Sure.
But I do want to say, starting out, Bill, that I have said this for decades now, that I believe the best large agency for the blind in this entire country. I've never seen a better one than the Chicago Lighthouse. The Lighthouse has been a hallmark of excellence for decades, and has done so many wonderful, has been a model for so many other agencies and so much of what they do. So I think people living in Chicago are blessed to have the Lighthouse and all three agencies that work together and try not to do this unnecessary duplication of efforts.
We're talking to Carl Augusto. It's one of our profile programs. He is the president and CEO of the American Foundation of the Blind. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more right here on The Beacon.
Every day, PACE is helping more and more people with disabilities take control of their day.
My friends change plans a lot, which was tough because my rides had to be booked a day before. One day, I figured out how easy it was to put my wheelchair onto regular PACE buses. Since then, I haven't missed out on any pickup games. Yesterday, I had 10 rebounds.
Freedom means being able to go wherever I want, when I want. Before, things like missing an ingredient for a recipe or other unexpected errands were a real pain to figure out. Once I learned my service dog Nola was welcome aboard Pace Fix routes, we've been riding ever since.
Hi, I'm Bridget Brown. If you're anything like me, it drives you nuts when you feel like you're missing out on things. Now I make plans in the middle of the day without even thinking twice about it, thanks to the Pace Bus.
When you're ready to take control of your day, visit PaceBus.com or call 847-364-PACE. Pace, connecting communities.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. And the odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 150. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at AutismSpeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen.
Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
In our profile spotlight this time around, we're talking to Carl Augusto. He is the president, chief executive officer of the American Foundation for the Blind. The organization has a very interesting background by the fact that it was founded by probably one of the premier names in the blindness community.
Yes. In 1921, Helen Keller was an advocate for the creation of the American Foundation for the Blind, and I think it was created in large part because of her advocacy. And it was really created back then to do the kinds of things that direct service agencies like the Chicago Lighthouse don't have time to do.
Mm-hmm.
Clearinghouse of information nationally, innovation, publications, and I'll get in a little more detail what
sure.
we do today. But AFB was very fortunate to bring on to its staff, after Helen Keller was the founder, 3 years after our founding, we were founded in 1921. In 1924, the Board of Trustees brought Helen on, Miss Keller, as I call her.
Right.
I've never met the lady. I wish I had. Onto the staff, really, to do fundraising.
Mm.
And after 5 or 6 years, she basically said, look, I want to do more. I'm not here just to be a pretty face,
right.
To extend my hand and bring in money. So she became an advocate. She became someone who traveled throughout the country to establish services. Whenever she met with a state legislature, she said, you know, you should have a commission for the blind in this state, and more likely than not, there would be a commission for the blind in that state. She would travel the world, visit countries, and she this her approach would be something like this, Bill. It's a great approach. She would people would, you know, honor her and say, "We're so blessed to have you here." And she would say, "Well, you've been so kind to me. You've been so wonderful. This is such a great country, but you need to do more for blind and visually impaired people than you're doing now. There's not enough services, educational services, not enough rehabilitation services. You need to do more." So she wasn't just complimenting people and smiling. She was there as a bulldog for change within those countries. And more likely than not, she succeeded in those countries as she succeeded in state legislatures.
She had a lot of respect, I think, from so many people, not only in the United States, but around the world, for the accomplishments that she was able to do. You know, we've all seen the story or the play, and, you know, we know her life story and what happened and how she overcame, you know, the which had to be a tremendous hurdle for her to overcome, you know, the blindness and the deafness.
Yep.
So, I mean, that alone, I'm sure, sent state legislators thinking to themselves, well, we have to, if she can do it, we can do something for people too.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Carl, the thing I'm noticing, though, is that for a long time, blind services in states like Illinois, and really that's the only one I can speak from experience with, they're trying to blend the blind service group into human services.
This is, you know, this has been a threat. When I first got involved on the national scene, Bill, this is back in 1975, that was a huge issue, and unfortunately it hasn't gone away. A lot of state legislators are concerned about spending money. They see separate agencies for the blind and they say, well, you know, blind people are disabled. Maybe there should be a generic agency for the blind. They see a separate school for the blind and they say, well, shouldn't all blind kids be mainstreamed? And, you know, we believe that there is a role for special schools for the blind.
Okay.
We think there's a role for separate state agencies for the blind. As a matter of fact, every state should have a separate agency for the blind, but only half of the states have separate agencies, and most of them are within a generic rehabilitation model. So there might be some separateness, but not enough to really allow the head of that agency to have the authority and the control over all of the services. So, yeah, this is a problem. What we've tried to do over the course of decades, Bill, is to develop some position papers, why we think that it is important for a separate agency for the blind to exist. We have some statistical information, too. But there's no question in my mind that the most effective way of dealing with the possibility of, you know, extinction of an agency for the blind or amalgamation with the generic agency for the blind is the power of the consumer.
Right.
You bring the organizations together, you bring the parents of blind children together, and even the professionals. If you can get within a state, the ACB, the NFB, the NAPFI, the Parent Association, the AER, to come together and set aside their differences and go to the legislature or the chief administrator of a state, the governor, and to say, look, we have some evidence here that a separate agency for the blind is very important, but we will not tolerate this state going to a generic model because blind people will simply fall through the cracks.
Right.
And if they say that over and over and over again and make a stink, hate to say this, sometimes that's what needs to be done.
Right.
That's been the most powerful force within states.
Well, that's the old adage that the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And that's the truth. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like I said, we've started to see some changes here because of the financial situation that Illinois is in, and I mean it's horrendous that we had politicians in offices that were more worried about getting reelected than about balancing the budget or getting close to balancing the budget, because you never will. You can't run a state government like you run a business. You cannot do that. I firmly believe that. Go ahead. You're laughing.
I was going to say, I haven't found a governor to do that yet, but yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, you know, and do you think that these organizations, like you mentioned, the AER, the ACB, the NFB, the alphabet soup, do you think that they will be smart enough to realize that they have to band together?
Or do
will we see a national?
And fortunately, we do have examples when that has worked. California, back in the 70s, they went from a separate state agency for the blind to a generic model. Mm-hmm. And in the late 90s, all those groups got together, including the agency serving the blind. They all got together in a coalition, and they created a separate agency for the blind. With Texas, although they don't have a commission for the blind as they did, they still have a separate agency for the blind because those groups got together when there was a threat to bring services for the blind and blend them into general rehab services, that those groups did get together to fight collectively. And the problem is, when that doesn't happen, usually a state loses. So, yeah, I think that's very important for those organizations to realize there's a higher mission here. Let's set aside our differences and let's work together.
You know, the other thing that I often run into when I talk to people about, you know, blindness and visual impairment is that a lot of old-timers that were acting as rehab counselors and job placement people, they have a hard time in accepting the fact that a larger population is going to be the low vision or vision impaired as opposed to folks who are, you know, totally blind.
Yep.
And they feel that too much money is being spent by organizations similar to the Lighthouse here and other organizations being spent on people who have very limited vision. However, that's where the future is. Because
absolutely. No, you said it very well, and I think that many of these old timers, and of course I'm getting up there in years, remember the day when there were very few seniors coming to services for the blind because people died earlier,
right,
and they didn't become visually impaired because they died before they became visually impaired, and we saw in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. This emergence of people with vision loss who are not going to become totally blind, mostly the groups that you mentioned before with, age-related macular degeneration. And we have to realize, and how many fights back in the old days, even in schools for the blind, the partials versus the totals.
Right.
Now, you know, we got to set aside those differences too, because in some respects, we can't forget that people with partial vision go through a heck of a time adjusting to their partial vision, and they need specialized services too. So, yeah, we try to be a huge advocate for agencies to do the kinds of things that the Chicago Lighthouse does. And, for example, its model low vision program. It's really one of the two or three, maybe the best low vision programs in the entire country.
Well,
Al Rosenblum was a pioneer in that whole thing, and we've got to serve all of the population. We can't just let we can't serve just low vision. We can't serve just totally blind people. We got to consider them people with vision loss.
Well, you know, Carl, I look at what we do here now with a low vision clinic that we have, low vision optometrists who are, you know, available to work with patients and to determine what their acuity is and what would best serve them. And we can provide the services of a store that will provide independent living aids for them to continue their life as normally as possible. We have a high-tech a division here. We have a help desk for people who have trouble getting, you know, used to working with JAWS or working with Zoom text, things like that. And we have an employment services and an office skills department. It makes a nice a nice round picture that to show that, you know, we're not only here just to, you know, to be a organization where you can come and spend the day and, you know, drink coffee and go home then at the end of the day, but actually want to show how viable partially sighted people can be, and the fact that they get the education and the money's there. I mean, they get the scholarships, they get the opportunity to do higher education. The problem is educating the employers to realize that, you know, these people that have gotten this education, they've gone on to get master's degrees, they've gone on to get PhDs, they are capable of handling these jobs. You just got to give them a chance and be willing to make the concessions that they need to function as well as anybody else in the office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And Bill, before I forget, because Janet Slick would slit my throat if I didn't mention this, we have a wonderful partnership with Chicago Lighthouse, the partnership between the American Foundation for the Blind and the Chicago Lighthouse.
Right.
We, on our website, we talk a lot about technology. We'll probably get into some of the things we do.
Sure.
But we have an Access World magazine, monthly magazine on technology. And a lot of people come onto our website and see our product database that can see all the different products that they can buy. What we've never done before is to have a mechanism so if somebody sees a product they'd like to buy, we never gave them that opportunity to go through our website. So what happens now is you go to our website, you want to buy a product, we'll send them right out to the Chicago Lighthouse, and they can buy the product from the Chicago Lighthouse. You have a nationwide distribution.
Yep.
We also have a center on vision loss in Dallas. It doesn't do the kinds of things that you guys do,
right?
Because blind people don't go to their our center to receive direct services, but they do come to our center to see what's available to people with vision loss. And again, before they leave, they want to buy something, we have a direct connect to the Chicago Lighthouse website so they can buy products. And this is wonderful for you guys, this is wonderful for us, but much more importantly, it's wonderful for the person with vision loss who might want to get something, don't know where to go. And we're going to facilitate that.
You're going to make it happen. I had an opportunity, maybe about 7-8 years ago, to be the keynote speaker for the ACB convention, the state convention down in Texas. You keep mentioning about Texas and how much they work together. And, you know, it is so true. I was blown away by the interest of not only people who needed the services, but people who were there to help direct people to get the services that they need and to show them that it's not the end of the world.
Yep, that's an important message.
You know, thank you so much for mentioning about the fact that we have the Tools for Living store here, because I mentioned to Lee Nasehi from Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
She was just overwhelmed at the fact that the store has the size that it does and the ability to ship, you know, not only in the United States but around the world, Canada and Australia and places like that. I know our help desk have gotten calls from they have gotten it from all the states and from a lot of the English speaking countries around the world too. So that says a lot that people are starting to recognize that the Lighthouse is here for everybody and not just the totally blind. And that's the stigma, I think, that a lot of organizations have to overcome, that it's not only for the blind, but it's for the visually impaired as well.
Absolutely.
You know, so what do you, we're going to talk a little bit about what you guys are doing today.
Okay.
And we're going to take a quick break, come back. We're talking to Carl Augusto, who is the CEO and president of the American Foundation of the Blind. And he's in our profile spotlight this week. We'll be back with more after this.
If you enjoy listening to The Beacon, why not become part of the family? You can tell our audience about your product or service at a reasonable cost. We will even help you produce your message in a way that will capture our listeners' ear for you. By advertising on The Beacon, you will not only reach thousands of people who need and want your product or service, don't have an agency, or wouldn't know the first thing about producing a radio commercial, let The Beacon staff help you write and produce your message. Now that the economy is picking up and people are spending more on things they need, this is the perfect opportunity for you to get the word out. For more information and a free consultation, just call Bill Jurek at 312-997-3678 or email Bill at bill.jurek@chicagolighthouse.org. Come on, join the Beacon family and increase your sales by reaching an audience that really wants to hear your message. Call today at 312-997-3678. Again, that's 312-997-3678 or bill.jurek@chicagolighthouse.org.
So I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
I lost my daughter Chrissy to cancer. She was just 45 years old. But in her final hours, she chose to give me the ultimate gift. My vision was failing. Through a cornea transplant, Chrissy gave me the gift of sight.
One person can improve the quality of life for up to 25 people.
Cancer didn't define Chrissy. Her giving spirit did.
It takes less than a minute to join the Secretary of State's Organ and Tissue Donor Registry. Go to lifegoeson.com.
I could see so much better. The eyes are the mirror to the soul. And now through Chrissy's eyes, I can see and experience so much joy. Through her eyes, I've seen her daughter's wedding and the birth of my beautiful great-granddaughter.
Each year, 300 people die waiting for a transplant. Give the gift of life. Become an organ and tissue donor today by visiting lifegoeson.com.
Chrissy's gift changed a life. You can too.
Carla Gusto, a name if you are in the blind community, if you do anything with blind organizations that serve people who are visually impaired or totally blind, you know his name. He is the CEO and the president of the American Foundation for the Blind in New York City. He's joining us today, and we're shining our profile on him because of the work that he's done. And I was, like I said earlier on, I was totally blown away that you started out as president and CEO. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's I've enjoyed my 24 years, and I hope to have a few more, too.
I was going to say, you're not planning any retirement real soon, are you?
No, I'm not. And the Board of Trustees has not urged me to do so. So as long as they want to employ me, I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
You're going to do it, and you're going to do it right. Did you happen to know Judge Richard Casey?
I sure did. Yes, I knew him. He's the... as a matter of fact, we wrote a letter on his behalf. The Clinton administration might even have been four.
Right. No, it was Clinton. It was Clinton.
Okay, he had a federal judgeship,
right,
in the New York City. New York City,
the district, yeah, that southern part of New York there, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He was a great guy. He passed away about, what, 7 or 8 years ago?
Yeah, and he was in my one of my classes when I got my second guide dog from Guiding Eyes for the Blind up in Yorktown Heights. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was a great guy. If I remember correctly, Bill, he also lost his vision over the course of time, or was he born blind? I can't remember.
No, it was over a course of time, and
I thought so.
One of the things he and I talked about, and I wish I had an opportunity to do a show like this with him before he passed away, but he went through the same trauma that everybody else does who starts to lose their vision later in life. He says, I'm a lawyer. He says, what am I going to do? It requires a lot of reading. How am I going to do this?
Yeah,
you know, and he figured out a way, in such a way that he was able, like you said, to be appointed to the federal district court judgeship in New York City.
Yeah,
you know, he got a dog. I got to tell you a story. He got a dog at the school because Dick liked big dogs. and he got a black Labrador retriever, and the dog's name was Iron, just like, you know, the metal.
And
this dog weighed about 110 pounds. It was a huge Labrador. And we all got the names of our dogs, and I sat next to him, you know, because we were going through the action program, which is a shorter program for students at the school. And he leans over to me and he says, "Who the hell would name a dog Iron?"
It is a funny name.
So he says, "You know what I'm going to do?" He says, "I'm going to change his name to Iron Barney," because he used to eat at Barney's all the time in New York City. And he says, "I'm changing his name to Iron Barney." So what he kept doing over a period of time is he just kept saying the iron part quieter, and the dog got used to being called Barney in that. But
That's funny.
I accepted an award from the school for him a year after he passed away, and it was a great honor because he was just such a wonderful man. From what I understand, he doesn't open up to everybody, and he opened up. I learned about his family. I learned about the whole situation and how somebody at that level or that station in life goes through the same thing as anybody else does, you know, on the family level as well as their own level of mourning and getting angry and everything else that goes with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing I liked about Dick, and I think you're portraying it too, is that obviously he had to be a very accomplished, very intelligent person.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talked with him, he didn't kill you with $25,000 words.
Right.
He talked just like the rest of us talk. And you know, you could be sitting next to him in an airplane, and you would not know what his job was. You'd think that he just is an everyday Joe because that's the way he. He behaved.
He told a story about he was at a function. He was very Catholic, and he told a function that for one of the cardinals in New York, and he was standing there telling a joke to either one of the Monsignors or one of the other religious types, and he felt somebody tap him on the shoulder, and being blind, he leaned back. He says, "Yeah, in a minute." He says, "You know," so he finished telling the joke, and everybody laughed, and then he turned to the other person behind him, and she said, "Oh, I'm so sorry that I bothered you in the middle of a funny story," and he realized it was Joan Justice Ginsburg. Who were friends. They were very close friends. And he felt...
Oh, my God.
He felt so embarrassed. He goes, he says, you know, Justice, you should have said something and everything. She says, no. She says, the story was more important. She says, "I was just coming over to say hello and how you doing," that sort of thing. So
that's great.
He was such a knowledgeable person when it came to constitutional law.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
just amazing. Just
yep.
amazing.
He sure was.
Did he have anything to do with the organization, the AFB?
Now, he served on an advisory committee for us.
Uh-huh.
When we got to know him pretty well, he was already a federal court judge. So he could not be a member of our board of trustees, for example. But he was the kind of guy that we would have loved to have had on our board of trustees, a very accomplished blind person. But, yeah, he did serve on an advisory committee because he was able to do that. It wasn't a governance kind of situation.
Sure. Yeah, that's it. I got off track here. I'm sorry I did this. But the story about Judge Casey was worth mentioning. The AFB today, what does it mean? What direction are you guys heading in?
Very good. We really started by being a resource for professionals and for organizations serving the blind.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, back in the early days, we started publishing.
Okay.
We published textbooks for university preparation programs for practitioners who are working with blind people. We still have the publishing, we call it AFB Press.
Mm-hmm.
We publish lots of textbooks. Every single university preparation program in North America, the 45, use our textbooks for their those students who are preparing for a career in blindness.
Mm-hmm.
So publishing is very important. We do have a journal, a scholarly journal that we also publish, and we have a great relationship with our professional association, AER, with the Association for Education and Rehabilitation of the Blind and Visually Impaired, and working together with them to make our journal a member benefit for AER members.
Sure.
We also do professional development. We've always done that, again, for professionals preparing for or in the field of blindness. We used to have workshops, sending people throughout the country. Now, mostly, it's e-learning online, courses and webinars. We have a big focus on technology. As I mentioned, we have our monthly Access World magazine, and we do evaluate products, both mainstream and special products for the blind and visually impaired in that magazine. And we also do some other things. We've done some apps. We have a note taker, which is an app, a free app that you get called Access Note from your iTunes and Android resources.
Sure.
So a lot of blind and visually impaired people use the app because, you know, our smartphones don't have that much space for collecting, organizing, categorizing our notes, and this app does do that. It's fully accessible.
Right.
And what we've done, all of course, we still have our Washington office where we are working with other advocacy organizations to get laws passed, regulations enacted so that we can level the playing field for people with vision loss. You were going to make a comment, Bill.
No. I was going to say, are you doing joining like AFB and ACB as lobbyists in that? Yeah,
that's correct. Yeah. So, that's correct. And that's another way we can all work together, because usually we all agree. We might have a little different point of view, but if we can, we're trying to look for the same ultimate objective. We should be working together, so we do that. And then there is three, I'd say, vulnerable populations that we've identified over the course of time. And you might say that we've gotten involved a little more in direct services this way, where we have on our website three programs, one devoted to adults experiencing vision loss for the first time called Vision Aware.
Mm-hmm.
We have a second program for mostly from teens and early 20s, people with vision loss considering careers called Career Connect. And then we have a website called Family Connect, primarily for parents of young children.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, those are three vulnerable populations: the older person experiencing vision loss for the first time,
right,
the multi-disabled young person and their families who, you know, just because of low birth weight, just became visually impaired at birth. And then those kids that are struggling to figure out, gee, what can I do? As you mentioned earlier, you know, blind people can do just about everything these days.
Yeah.
But a lot of their counselors, a lot of their parents, a lot of themselves don't realize what they can do, and then Career Connect can help them. So we've tried to identify those three groups as very important to do some special things on our website for.
Well, that sounds absolutely fabulous. You know, I think we covered a lot of ground here in the hour and the short period of time that we had to spend together, and we could go on for more, so maybe we'll have you back and do a follow-up on the program, or at least a segment on each of the those different categories that you talked about, and let people know that the services are available and that you're there to help. You're there to make sure that they get the most out of life.
Absolutely, and our website is afb.org, so it's an easy thing to remember.
Absolutely. Carl, hang on a second. I want to talk to you after we get off the air, but we've been speaking with Carl Augusto, who is the president, CEO of the American Foundation of the Blind. He has been featured as our profile guest this week on the program, and we'll be back with Tom's Corner, speaking of the store, right after this.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay. Then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
When Dad needed help getting around, I became his driver. Any daughter would do the same. But soon enough, he needed help doing more things. And it was up to me to be his personal shopper and financial manager, too. And before I knew it, Dad moved in with me. So I became his cook, his personal assistant, his physical therapist, and even his nurse. When I started taking care of Dad, I didn't realize all the roles I'd have to play. But no matter what, I know I'm still his daughter.
We understand the many roles you play. And to help, we created an online caregiving resource center. At aarp.org/caregiving, you can find resources and connect with the caregiving community. Together, we can better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving to learn more. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
It's a Memorial Day weekend, and hopefully you'll be able to enjoy it. I know I will. How about you, Tom?
I'm going to enjoy it, sunny, and being outside.
Yeah.
Right.
And lots of food.
Exactly.
But today, Ebot is what we got, and that's from the Hims Company. We talked about the Candy Grip last week from that company, Texas company, but right. The Ebot, exactly what is that, Tom?
Ebot is a, I guess you could say, is the electronic robot.
Oh, makes sense.
Right, right. So it's an unusual name, but as you mentioned, the Hims Company has been around, and many people who are blind or vision impaired might know some of their products, especially in the Braille displays and things like that. But they're making a presence known in the low vision marketplace. Mm-hmm. They opened an office, as you mentioned, in Austin, Texas. And the president, James McCarthy, who also has low vision, I've known James for a long, long time, was just recently here visiting. And they are ready to rock and roll and launching these new products that are very unique. The Candy Grip is a portable CCTV, as we mentioned, where you can read and write and even look at yourself, which is kind of wild. So the Ebot is a bigger product. It's about 9 by 12, if you can picture, a little bit bigger than a piece of paper, okay? And it's about 2 inches thick, and it fits in a little briefcase, okay? Mm-hmm. And so what you would do is you would take it out of the briefcase, and you would set it on your desk. I think it's primarily really good for students, because wait till you hear what it can do.
Okay.
So you set it on your desk, and then you would... like a little, the kids transformer where you start pulling things up and
right.
and over, and all of a sudden there's a camera with a head facing out or facing down. And the Ebot, they have three versions of it, but the Pro, I'm going to talk about the Pro because it does everything
right.
except cook your breakfast, I think. But the Ebot, you turn it on and it actually sends a signal wirelessly to whatever you have there to display it on. So if you're a PC or a Mac user, mm-hmm. it'll send the image to your PC and Mac. It'll send an image to your laptop computer, and even the iPad, which is, there is no product right now that can do that, send the image to your iPad. So if you slide your paper underneath, and many of us who live with macular degeneration and other vision problems, we need that magnification that's so important. And with easy gestures, It displays it right on the iPad. Now, what's really cool about it is they actually built inside the robot, they built its own Wi-Fi connection.
Wow.
So I know so many these new products, when you go into a school system, there's interference in the Wi-Fi and the product doesn't work, you know, or you're in a building like here and you're not sure if you're getting the proper Wi-Fi connection. So this thing, they actually, I don't know how they did it, but they actually came up with their private little Wi-Fi system that'll go directly to your iPad. So now it's pretty cool. You can use your iPad as your display screen. You're free to actually walk around and be several feet or several rows away. Let's say a student puts the e-bot in the front row of the school and wants to sit farther back, it still works on your display.
Oh, okay.
And then with your iPad, you can control the size and the color and the magnification. And then if you want to look at the blackboard, you hit distance, and e-bot's a little motor goes and the camera shines right on to the screen. Now, we've had products that do that before, too, where a student could look up and control the camera with their hand and point it at the screen. But then the problem has always been they want to go back to reading right on the spot where they were reading.
Right.
When they move the camera back, they can't find where they were and they lose their place. Guess what? E-bot goes right back to the exact word.
And it finds it. Wow.
And it finds it right on the screen.
That's wonderful.
So it's pretty amazing. It's it does other really neat features. It has what we all know now is OCR, optical character recognition, where if you wanted to take a picture of the page, it'll read it out loud. So it has a little speaker built into the e-bot, or you can just connect your headphones to it and listen to the page. And so that's an important feature. So that's just going to be kind of a thing that blows everybody away in what it can do. So there's actually three versions. There's a version that does not have an electronic motor that does all the things we just described, but you can move your hand. And the retail prices are $28.95 all the way up to $39.95. So it's a little expensive, but I think it's a kind of a breakthrough product that will be very interesting, and we will start in our new fiscal year, July 1, that we will have it available here at the Chicago Lighthouse, both here at 1850 West Roosevelt Road in our Tools for Living store and technology center. We will also be able to go out to people's homes if they're interested, and we can do demonstrations or in a school setting or any setting that a person might need a product like this. Also in our Glenview location, 222 Waukegan Road in Glenview. And so we're excited to be able to share all this new technology and helping people with vision loss, which is, of course, our mission that we're so passionate about.
Sounds like the e-bot is the way to go, something that is a breakthrough for the future.
It is.
I guess it'll do it for us. He's Tom Persky. I'm Brian Hawkins. This is The Beacon.
Mozart toasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious.
And so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes.
And soon you realize how impactful your kids involvement in the arts can be.
Grades make more friends and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Every day, PACE is helping more and more people with disabilities take control of their day.
My friends change plans a lot, which was tough because my rides had to be booked a day before. One day, I figured out how easy it was to put my wheelchair onto regular PACE buses. Since then, I haven't missed out on any pickup games. Yesterday, I had 10 rebounds.
Freedom means being able to go wherever I want, when I want. Before, things like missing an ingredient for a recipe or other unexpected errands were a real pain to figure out. Once I learned my service dog Nola was welcome aboard Pace Fix routes, we've been riding ever since.
Hi, I'm Bridget Brown. If you're anything like me, it drives you nuts when you feel like you're missing out on things. Now I make plans in the middle of the day without even thinking twice about it, thanks to the Pace Bus.
When you're ready to take control of your day, visit PaceBus.com or call 847-364-PACE. Pace, connecting communities.
Chevy Checker. A new twist in the law makes it easier than ever to save on your Medicare prescription drug plan costs. So what are you waiting for? Go to socialsecurity.gov and apply for extra help. It's easier than learning the twist.
Listen, we'd like to thank Dr. Janet Slick for being the biggest supporter for our program over here. She's reading at 11 now.
Oh, yeah.
With this feature here, because she's herself. I don't know if she calls herself a vegan, but I know she's...
Well, she's a tiny little beautiful woman, so I'm sure she takes good care of herself.
She exercises and everything else. We also want to thank the folks at...
At Friedman Place for keeping up with us.
And staying with us through
so
the year.
So faithful.
You know, I did the math. We're going into our eighth year.
Okay.
That's what we're doing on the program.
Oh, my goodness.
All eight years, Mr. Brian Hawkins has been with us.
He has.
Not only does he do a great job as the co-host of Tom's Corner, but he's the guy that makes this whole radio program possible, make it sound as good as it does.
He's just a great guy.
And we appreciate Sandra Murillo's work on gathering the information and booking the guests and even having your own Sandy's View, which will be coming up. And that ties in with her blog that she does on the Chicago Lighthouse
website.
We're
just expanding all of our mediums.
Boy, I'm getting very excited. This was just a tiny little seed. I thought of it.
Just a little zygote.
Exactly. Now all of a sudden, boom.
it's like we're like 20 kids and counting or whatever that
Absolutely.
Show is. We got stuff going on all over the place.
Well, that's
going
to do it for us this week. I'm Bill Jurek.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
Come on back next week. We'll find out more about what it is to be a vegan. And I'm looking forward to the recipes coming up every week.
Pretty good.
The Mighty House folks are coming up next. We will have a couple of messages for you, the news, and then we'll see you back here next Saturday morning at 7 o'clock on Chicago's Progressive Talk. Have a great week.